This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. Last Friday, the Minister of Finance presented Budget 2021, Malaysia's biggest budget to fight the COVID-19 pandemic and also grow the economy. We speak with Johan Merican, Director of the National Budget Office at the Ministry of Finance, to understand if our money will be spent wisely. Welcome to the show, Johan. So I want to start by looking at your revenue projection. For 2021, MOF is projecting higher corporate and income tax revenue than 2019. Why are you optimistic that the government will earn more than what it did even before COVID-19?
Thank you, Noel. Good to be back on BFM. Thanks for having me. So with regards to our revenues, I think we need to look at it in the context of what our current GDP forecasts are. As you're aware, even though we expect to suffer a contraction in 2020, we do project that for 2021 that we should, to some extent, rebound between 6.5 to 7.5 GDP growth rate, which does then more than offset the contraction in 2020. So that puts us actually above in terms of 2019 levels. And so to that extent, if you maintain revenues as a percentage of GDP, we would then expect an increase in revenue. And I think in addition, you also look in terms of our other non-tax revenues. I think government also will look at what are some other areas that we can optimise, whether in terms of the government agencies and assets, whether we can also eke out more revenues from other sources as well.
So if we are banking on the fact that our economy will turn around, then why are you projecting for lower indirect taxes like SST and import and export duties compared to 2019?
Okay, so you're right. For indirect taxes, is relatively flat. The increase is probably shown a bit more in terms on the direct taxes in terms of LHDN. But I think overall, I think the approach taken by government is that we're quite keen to ensure that we reduce on whatever potential leakages. I think that's one thing that was mentioned in the budget speech by our minister. For example, I think one key focus is how do we address potential leakage. Like, for example, cigarettes is one area where illicit cigarettes is probably one leakage on our revenues. I think similarly, on LHDN, I think there's still an impression that there are many, you know, perhaps small businesses that perhaps are not taxpayers, which are out of the tax net. So I think these are some of the areas that we do need to focus, especially when times are quite challenging and there are a lot of demands on government expenditure. We do need to find a way to actually optimise on our revenue base.
So the increase in corporate taxes and individual income taxes, the increase even higher than 2019, understandably it will be slightly higher than 2020, but it's even higher than 2019. And you're banking on the fact that enforcement will be more strict. But is this really going to be calculated? I mean, is it based on some money that individuals and companies, money that they have diverted out of the country? Is that how the Inland Revenue is calculating this projected increase?
I think it's not really a case of being outside country. As mentioned, I think it's still anchored on looking at revenues as a percentage of GDP and hoping to then, as mentioned, 2021 will be seen at a high level at 2019 based on the expected GDP growth. And also in terms of really trying to see where are areas even within country, not really an issue about diversion, but really an issue of businesses who are still currently not within the tax net, and how we can ensure that we make sure that those who do create profits are taxed appropriately.
And then why wouldn't we be stepping up on SST as well, enforcement of that?
I think on SST perhaps is still an area that's being studied. As you know, this is an area that's been changing over the last few years. And I think that's an area that's still being studied. As you know, there's been no announcements in the budget speech in terms of either expanding or expanding the scope or increasing the number of exempted goods. So I think that's an area that's still being studied. But certainly on cigarette tax is one area that's specifically one area that we do want to reduce the leakage.
Okay, so but you are keeping this SST in mind. And so probably maybe in the following budget, we may see a broadening of the SST tax base?
Well, we're always looking to see how we can improve.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the allocations that are being done. So the government is only allocating 17 billion ringgit to fight COVID-19. That's less than half of what we'll spend this year, just slightly more than half of what we'll be spending this year. The opposition says this is too little. But why is 17 billion ringgit sufficient?
So maybe this refers to the COVID-19 fund. So the government went to Parliament in August to approve the COVID fund, which is a fund separate from our traditional operating expenditure and development expenditure. Parliament approved a total of 45 billion and much of it needed to be spent this year, because really this year was really the epicenter of the pandemic. A large amount was spent, for example, in terms of the wage subsidy. More than 12 billion has already been disbursed in terms of the wage subsidy. Another big one, obviously, is the Bantuan Prihatin. On that measure, also, there was BPN1, which was 11 billion. And in October, we disbursed another 4 billion, so that's 15 billion. So the large chunk of the COVID-19 fund has been spent this year. However, some of it flows on to next year. As you know, some of the wage subsidy flows into next year. Some of the small projects, the upskilling, reskilling projects also will be implemented next year. But certainly, it is not to the same scale as what we've seen this year. However, having said that, in his budget speech, YB Minister of Finance did announce that the government intends to go back to Parliament. So just after the supply bill, the government will also be tabling an increase of the ceiling for the COVID fund of 20 billion. Now, if you then look at the cash flow, 38 billion plus 17 billion in 2021, that adds up to 55 billion. So we're going back to Parliament to basically increase it by 20, which goes up to 65 billion. I hope I've not lost you on the maths, but there's basically an additional 10 billion, which we're providing as to give scope for the government to respond to if situation deteriorates. There's basically a further scope to then spend more next year. And that's the intention of going back to Parliament to increase the ceiling. And as the minister has mentioned, we have not specifically allocated funds for the vaccine due to the uncertainties. However, this increase in the COVID fund does then give the government latitude to then spend on the vaccine as soon as it's ready. And as the Minister of Finance has announced, the government is committed to provide it to Malaysians when it's ready.
So let me understand the math correctly. Yeah, right now, budget 2021 says 17 billion ringgit for COVID-19 fund next year.
Yes.
But now we are going to maybe ramp it up to another 10 billion ringgit.
Yes.
To 27 billion ringgit for next year.
That's a ceiling that we've requested. As you know, the COVID fund lasts till 2022. So this could then also spill over as requirements for 2022. But if the need arises, a situation worsens, further wave or requirements such as a vaccine arises during next year, then this gives us the scope.
Okay, so you'll keep in the reserve like another 10 billion ringgit. So, the opposition says this is too little, and because when we're looking at 17 billion ringgit for next year and this year you spend 38 billion ringgit, and we know that I think the CMCO at the pace of how things are, it may even go on till Chinese New Year, right? And then we have the Sarawak elections in August, and the vaccine is only realistically available for mass distribution in the fourth quarter. So you may have to use this 10 billion ringgit, but why is it that MOF is so keen to project a lower fiscal deficit in 2021?
You know, Noel, we were just talking before coming on air. You know, the government is in this sort of situation where it's always having to balance. I think on one hand, the government recognizes the need to spend, particularly in a situation of crisis. On the other hand, the government always still needs to maintain a level of fiscal prudence. So on one hand, certainly the government has responded, I would say, very proactively. We see that what was originally projected for budget 2020 was a deficit of 3.2%. The government recognised the need and pushed it all the way up to 6% in response to this crisis. And to some extent, a moderation to 5.4%, some analysts would say it's not enough, a moderation. But, you know, the government still feels that it's important to have an expansionary budget. And therefore, in absolute terms, that's why the total expenditure still increases in absolute terms to the largest in history, the 322.5 billion.
I'm very curious about the kind of conversations that take place between the government and international rating agencies. Is the government under pressure by these agencies to avoid a downgrade, especially when we have all this political uncertainty hanging over us?
I think, as you are probably aware, also in your conversations, in terms of Malaysia, when you look at our credit rating peers, we are perhaps not as good as them on certain metrics. But on the other hand, we do better on other metrics like growth, domestic liquidity. So it's one of these balancing acts. You know, we don't want to be perhaps scoring below our peers on every single count. And therefore, you know, there is always this balancing act. How do we ensure that on one hand, we spend enough to meet our domestic needs, you know, the needs of our people and businesses, but on the other hand, you know, we try our best, also try to avoid a credit rating downgrade.
How concerned are the agencies about political uncertainty?
you know, not been involved in the most recent conversations, but certainly I think when they do look at the metrics across all countries, that is a matter that they look into. But I think credit ratings really look at in terms of their formulas and really seeing really more in terms of the brass tacks, looking at your deficit, looking at your debt. You know, those really are things that, you know, there's no running around, you know, you know, are you at these levels which meet their requirements? I think that's something that, you know, that's always something that we also have to track very carefully.
We are speaking with Johan Merican, Director of the National Budget Office at the Ministry of Finance, about the Budget 2021. We'll continue our discussions after this.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
We're speaking with Johan Merican, Director of the National Budget Office at the Ministry of Finance, about Budget 2021. So there's a substantial increase in allocation for special projects under the Prime Minister's Department from 100 million ringgit in 2020 to 1 billion ringgit next year. How will this benefit Malaysians and what is it really for?
I think particularly, as you may be aware, there's the upcoming 12 Malaysia Plan, which will be announced in January. So some of the details are to be worked out and to be fine-tuned in the announcement in January. So what we've done is that we've basically provided an allocation which will be under, it's principally under the Economic Planning Unit and under the Prime Minister's Department. And that's really then to enable the implementation of some of the key projects that are aligned to some of the new initiatives that they're going to roll out under the 12 Nation Plan.
And what might some of these initiatives be? Like, you know, maybe just some broad idea, if you could give us a broad idea.
I think one of the areas which I think the Minister Prime's Department has spoken about is, I guess also in the context of the current COVID situation, there's also a focus in terms of small-scale projects, particularly at the local level. In Budget 2021, we've already identified 2.5 billion, which has been focused for small-scale projects. And this includes, you know, some of them may be maintenance works, you know, road repair, basic infrastructure, rural infrastructure. So these are some of the projects. We've increased, like, some of the, for example, Sabah Sarawak, what we call connectivity for rural areas. These are perhaps some of the projects that can be rolled out quite quickly in the context of upcoming year. And at the same time, it's things which we do believe, at least in terms of improving the quality of life of the people.
Why do you park this expenditure under the Prime Minister's Department and not in the rural department, for example?
So, as you know, the 12 Malaysia Plan is coordinated by the Economic Planning Unit. And in a sense, in terms of process, if you're not familiar, to approve a development project, it typically is basically have to go through Economic Planning Unit in terms of approving whether the project goes ahead or not. And then Ministry of Finance then will separately allocate for it. By putting it under the Prime Minister, basically it's for the APU when once they then determine, because not all the projects would necessarily go to the Ministry of Rural. It could be goes to the Ministry of Works, it could go through, in fact, Ministry of Education for some of the dilapidated schools that you have in Sabah, Sarawak. So these are some of the areas they could, it is then for really between Prime Minister's Department or within EPU then to then subsequently determine the specific projects when they announce it early next year, the 12th Malaysia Plan, and then we at Ministry of Finance work with them to basically allocate it to necessary ministries.
Yeah, well, I think there's always this thing about trust deficit, right, and transparency. When you put it under the Prime Minister's Department, you put it in the highest authority in the country, right? So this raises the question, why the money really has to come from the Prime Minister's Department? I mean, just cut the story short, is this really contracts for politicians?
No, certainly these are really what it's really about timing. It is so happens that next year is the first year of the 12 Malaysia Plan. In the ideal scenario, perhaps we would have wanted to initiate the 12 Malaysia Plan before Budget 2021, but, you know, COVID and the rest of it. So I think the timing is such that budget has occurred first and the 12 Malaysia Plan follows. I think that gives them the room to basically really articulate in terms of the priorities that they are going to announce shortly.
So this allocation goes to the Prime Minister's Department for expediency to get it approved quickly?
No, I mean, this is not unusual in terms of having allocations at central agencies, at Ministry of Finance or really under the Economic Planning Unit to really then determine based on priorities.
Yes, I think I understand that this is not unusual and that's really the problem, right? Because it's not unusual, it's business as usual. And we know before this thing about, you know, wanting to announce a national emergency, many politicians were baying for positions and more influence. So one can, unless there's just more transparency on what this amount of money is really, really for, there's going to be questions about really, is this just a way to award contracts to keep politicians happy?
I think if you look at it in terms of also managing in terms of contingencies for development expenditure, you have, for example, a budget of 322 billion. And you're basically speaking about a 1 billion allocation that's under the Prime Minister's budget. I think in relative terms, you know, it's not an unusually large number to manage as a fund to be subsequently reallocated to ministries based on projects that are soon to be announced.
There's this other item here, the additional 4 billion ringgit for the Ministry of Finance development expenditure. We understand it's for various capital injections. It sounds like we are bailing out some companies. Could you give us more, you know, an indication? What is this additional 4 billion ringgit? What is it going to be used for?
So as you may be aware, there are some legacy issues on restructurings that the government has to undertake.
Like Malaysia Airlines?
So, no. So, for example, you may recall, for example, there's Tabung Haji. As you know, there's the 10 billion that needs to be paid over 10 years. And so there's every year there'll be at least a billion that needs to be allocated. As you know, the Felder White Paper is also another restructuring where basically there'll be government debt, which basically Felder may not be able to service. And therefore, we're also allocating a sum basically to enable them to also to help service it. There are also some, in terms of previous debt commitments, which, you know, includes, we have an entity called Dana Infra, which is then used to help finance the entities such as projects such as the Pan Bonio, the MRT. So these are basically financing amounts that needs to be paid on projects and financial commitments.
How do we know, actually, is this 4 billion ringgit enough? Because this year has been, you know, quite a difficult year for many companies. How confident are we that this 4 billion is enough?
No, some of it is actually a scheduled repayment of debt which has been raised for some of the specific projects. So what have been budgeted for really relates to really the financial commitments, the debt commitments in these what we call project entities. But of course, what you've raised is that, you know, we're always alert that there may be also other, you know, agencies that may be facing you know, difficulties given this sudden crisis. I mean, that's something that we continue to monitor and track.
Do you keep like a reserve, like just like COVID-19, you keep aside 10 billion as reserve? Are you keeping aside?
I think for us at the Ministry of Finance, because we're always quite conscious to really manage our fiscal deficit. And so when we announce whether it's 6% this year and 4%, we're really quite keen to manage it within those parameters. And so what happens is that typically if a new issue arises, if an entity suddenly needs in need of a restructuring, we will then really have to reallocate it based on priorities.
So there's other allocation that has been making its rounds on social media. I think civil societies have raised concerns about the need for JASA, to revive JASA and to allocate 80 million ringgit to revive it. Many see it as a political propaganda machine. And if, you know, 80 million ringgit, if you ask any internationally competitive marketing agency, the immediate reaction is that this amount is way over the top if you're just talking about communication. So can you tell us, what is this money going to be spent on and what are its KPIs?
So in terms of JASA, I guess it, by its reputation, as you mentioned, it has a reputation, but it is something that was under the previous Barisan National Government. It was dissolved under the PH government, and the current government saw fit that to re-establish JASA. In its stated scope, it is intended to be help to disseminate information. One of the needs arising is that we're also finding that through the stimulus packages, there are a lot of assistance being given out to the poor and particularly rural populations, and there still seems to be a knowledge or information gap where many who are eligible are not necessarily getting the assistance that they need. So that's one function that they play. In terms of the allocation of 80 million, this is comparable to the allocation that was provided previously, 2018 and previously. So in 2018, from memory, it's about 81 million. So it's comparable to the 85 million that has been provided under Budget 2021. The largest component of the cost is actually in terms of staff costs. And so going back to 2018, they basically had a headcount of about almost 1,000 people throughout the country. And so that's really the main part of their cost structure.
So 2021, how many people do they plan to hire?
I don't have the exact number, but I do suspect it is in a comparable amount to what was done previously.
Okay, because one number that was mentioned was 52 people, and so there were a lot of questions. So you are disputing that figure?
No, so the way JASA has operated previously and going forward is that they have a relatively small number of permanent positions or civil servants who are based, say, in Putrajaya. So that 52 relates to the permanent staff that they have in Putrajaya. Historically and going forward, the most of the the numbers that get allocated, even the 1,000 that was previously appointed previously, were all on contract terms.
Right. So 80 million ringgit. So a lot of it is about educating the rural communities. Do we even understand how do they receive information? You know, my first immediate reaction would be, well, the government owns RTM channels. Presumably, rural communities do plug into, they watch RTM channels, and you can get coverage for free, right? Why do you really need 80 million ringgit? And why do you need 1,000 people?
Perhaps, I think, Noel, I think to be fair, perhaps people in the rural communities are perhaps not as plugged in as we are. We now don't even watch TV. We don't watch TV, and we probably rely a lot of things from the internet and social media. But you know, what we find is that really still in the rural areas, information does still need to be disseminated. But what we see is that the JASA will be in the same ministry as RTM, and therefore we understand that they will then need to coordinate how to then complement what is on TV, radio, and on the ground dissemination.
So one thing I know, being involved in the budget process some years back, one of the questions that MOF does ask is, what are the expected outcomes? If we give you this money, what do you expect to produce? So what are its deliverables for 80 million ringgit?
I think broadly, whether it's for the Ministry of KKMM, the Ministry of Information and Communication, is how did they ensure a certain level of awareness in terms of stated policies, in terms of, and I think particularly in the COVID-19 scenario, I think what we want to reduce is the potential exclusion error for our assistance. So even when the government announces Bantuan Prihatin Rakyat for next year, which has 8 million recipients, this year Bantuan Prihatin Nasional has 10.6 million recipients. We still do get much of the feedback, you know, and you probably come across the UNICEF study that even in urban areas, you're finding some PPRs where there are people who are eligible who are not getting it. So I think that's an area which I think the government is keen to address. How do we reduce the exclusion errors for the various assistance that we provide, especially to the poor and less disadvantaged?
If we expect the economy to turn around, do we really need so much for communication then? If we're expecting the economy to turn around, then obviously we're expecting to have COVID-19 under control. We may not. The budget is really assuming that, right? That we're going to turn around, that things will go back to normal. In fact, they'll go back to 2019, the good old days of 2019. Do we really need to, you know, go out there and do so much communication then?
I think, I'm not sure what you mean by go back to normal, because I think even with some of the good news on vaccines, you know, there's still some question marks on. The vaccine may protect, but it may not even help in terms of prevent communication or further transmission. I think one of the issues that we still need to address is how do we ensure better nationwide compliance with SOPs? And I think that's not something that's going to waste. So even communications, and not just in terms of the assistance that we need to provide, but how do we ensure also that communities really do comply with the SOPs to really help address? And so that I think going forward, particularly wearing the economic hat, we certainly can't afford to have another MCO. And even some have argued that a CMCO is a relatively blunt tool. So we really need to go forward to a situation where I think we have to learn to live with COVID in an environment where perhaps it needs to be more targeted, and maybe the EMCO needs to be, you know, be more tactical. You know, when something happens as a cluster, it's more targeted, and that probably needs to be something that I don't think is going to go away. And this is something that we need to have also the machinery that we then are able to implement, you know, targeted controls and SOPs, as I don't think life going forward, even if we're able to get the economic growth back. I mean, we're seeing exports, recovering, we're seeing factories open, but I don't think life is not going to be completely like it used to be.
Thank you so much. And so we've been speaking to Johan Merican, Director of the National Budget Office at the Ministry of Finance. We'll continue our conversation after news to understand further about Budget 2021. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. I'm Noel Lim. Today, we're speaking with Johan Merican, Director of the National Budget Office at the Ministry of Finance, and we've been discussing Budget 2021. So let's just talk about this this new headline here about allowing EPF members to take an advance from their accounts, one under ICNR scheme. So EPF actually had earlier suggested that other sources should be tapped beforehand to be fiscally conservative. But yet, you know, the government seems to be rushing this through, and the implementation starts this week and withdrawal can happen, like, I think in December. Why the rush? Is this a reflection of the failure of Prihatin? And is it about getting UMNO support for the budget?
I think maybe just to clarify, Noel, actually, members can start applying for December, and actual crediting to accounts will only happen from beginning January 2021. You know, I think this is not an easy area, I think, for the government. I think on one hand, there's recognition of the cash flow challenges that people face. And I think in that respect, the stimulus packages, we've already implemented various forms of assistance in addition to the Bantuan Prihatin Rakyat and Bantuan Sara Hidup. But those really are targeted more towards the B40. And I think one of the recurring themes is, what about the M40? And I think you see in the budget 2021 a concerted effort to also look at the M40. There was basically a tax reduction, those earning within 50,000 to 70,000. There are various tax reliefs that have been announced, really how you can lighten the burden for the M40, and even for the loan assistance, the targeted loan assistance that was followed on from the loan moratorium. You also see that for M40 who've had a reduction in income, there's also a facility for them to also continue to enjoy a loan restructure. So we're really looking to see how can we help the cash flow of the Rakyat, not just the B40, but also the M40.
So why not just expand the I Lestari withdrawal from account too, or the money has run out?
So I think what you have heard as well is that for some, I think I can't remember the exact percentage or 30%, we're already due to exhaust their I Lestari. That's one. But I think the other issue that's arising is that, coming back to M40, you know, the anecdotes of, let's say, a pilot who's actually reasonably high income, now perhaps not able to fly, having suffered a significant drop in income, but has potentially significant savings in EPF. So how does the government try to balance between what are the short-term needs of the Rakyat versus the longer-term needs of ensuring the sufficient retirement savings? I think in coming up with this balance, as we look to what was already provided, whether it's the earlier reduction in the mandatory contributions from 11 to 7%, in addition to what was loan assistance, I think there's a feeling that for those who really are in a situation where they've suffered a very sharp drop in their incomes, how do you then assist them? And I guess to some extent, the I Lestari only provided a relief of 500 ringgit a month. So this is why, in that respect, ICNR has been designed to enable a more substantial amount to be taken up front, really based on those who do have a significant savings. And I guess you need to focus on the fact that we're ensuring that it is only really a 10%, in a sense, a withdrawal from their account one.
And they need to top it up again.
And yes, as soon as then perhaps they've resumed income or they're working again, that then all needs to be contributed completely into account one to replenish what has been withdrawn before it basically then gets, you know, split between account one and account two.
So what happens if the budget's not approved on 25th November? Will civil servant salaries still be paid?
Well, that's a real problem for me, given I'm a civil servant and would like my salary paid. No, but it's a very serious issue. You know, under any normal circumstances, certainly we need the budget approved. And we have never had a precedent of a budget not being approved. But certainly if a budget is not approved before the year end, come January, the government really will not have the authority to make any expenditure. And that's obviously a very serious matter. I think it's doubly serious in an environment that we have today, where some of the expenditure is required for COVID-19, because right now you have the supply bill going in, and that will be followed up by also the COVID-19 fund bill. And that's required for the additional funds for fighting COVID-19. So if these don't get approved, it really would undermine the efforts that government is taking really to help fight COVID-19 beyond potentially a shutdown of government services as we know it.
Will the shutdown happen immediately, or there will be a gap, like say 2 months? Because then 2 months, a change in government can happen, right? And then things can just get back to normal.
I think, you know, we know that perhaps, you know, one of the things that may be triggered would be an elections and a new government coming in and then able to retable a budget. But I think the concern is that, you know, we've already seen some of the impact of a Sabah election. I think the Election Commission, you know, is quite concerned, and they obviously need to do necessary preparations for a general elections if such a general elections are called. I don't think something that they want to rush into. Therefore, you know, it does bring into mind a lot of uncertainties. And I'm not sure how we survive 2 months either, because there are bills that need to be paid, certainly by the end of January. That also includes, for example, the Bantuan Prihatin. There's another 2 billion of assistance that was due to be disbursed in January. And on top of the various businesses that are reliant on government.
So let's say, in terms of time frame, if 25th November, it doesn't go through, we are looking at a 1 month a shutdown immediately, or there will be we have some space, like 1 month or so?
Well, certainly we have an allocation and budget for the rest of 2020, but a budget needs to be approved before the next year to enable expenditure to start.
Right, okay.
So I think that would be the concern.
So anything, maybe a shutdown in January?
I'm not sure that we should be using that phrase, but certainly you won't be able to be paying the sort of bills, salaries, rental.
From January onwards.
I mean, there's something called tanggungan, where we see we can still pay our pensions and debt service ratio. So in this sense, our government debt would still be on it. But in terms of normal day-to-day expenditure, that would not be possible.
And that would be disastrous for our ratings, right?
Well, that's probably even last in our mind. I think the more immediate thing is, you know, government serves a lot
and
of people.
And your salary.
No, I think the main thing is that, you know, government serves a lot of people, you know, hospitals, welfare payments, schools. And I think that's really the more immediate concern. But, you know, I guess as a civil servant, I remain mildly optimistic that our political masters, I think at the end of the day, I think they're all motivated by national interest. And I think at the end of the day, if I can basically just share a little anecdote, you know, I was there when we were preparing our first stimulus package. And even in the depth of the Sheraton move, end of February, you had our former minister working throughout his whole Sunday working on the stimulus package. And then you know what happened. And then Thursday, you had the interim prime minister announcing that stimulus package. And followed by the next Monday, Tan Sri Muhyiddin as the incoming prime minister saying, please proceed to implement the stimulus package that was prepared by the previous government. And as you know, he's also now fully taken on board the shared prosperity vision that Tun Mahathir initiated. So I think there's still, at the end of the day, I think all our political masters are motivated by national interest. And so we hope that will guide them in terms of ensuring that the budget gets approved to ensure that the country continues operating and we don't have any disruption in our fight against COVID-19.
So each crisis, like the Asian financial crisis, global financial crisis, it always leaves some sort of scar on the country. The country is never the same again. You know, despite we say, yes, the economy will grow back, yes, and all that. But we know that it's not the case because, like Asian financial crisis, for example, private investments only came back something like 8 to 10 years later to a pre-crisis level. And then you have China now, right? That is, you know, having their own thing, right? So what are the biggest risks Malaysia face going forward, even beyond COVID-19?
I think rather than look at it at risk, you know, it's often said, don't waste a good crisis. And we do hope that perhaps, you know, it has to some extent, you know, accelerated the need for digitalization and automation. And we do hope that some of our business models of companies that have been overly reliant on cheap, unskilled labor would then really be forced to really transform and really embrace the new digital era. And that's also one of the emphasis of the budget, to really try to move in that direction for the future.
Well, you have a first-class honours from Cambridge and your former CEO of Talent Corp, now in charge of the government's budget. It's no doubt a powerful role as you serve as a gatekeeper. But as I see it, the budget process can be hijacked by politicians and vested interests. So if you were presented an alternative role, what would you like to do?
Sure, that wasn't in the script for today's presentation. No, I think there's really a lot of fulfillment working in government, and I hope that my colleagues and I are continuing to able to contribute in whatever way we can. And especially as a time of crisis, perhaps that's what we should continue doing.
Well, thank you so much for making time for us, Johan Merican, Director of the National Budget Office at the Ministry of Finance, Malaysia. I'm Noel Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.